session number 23812, reel 10.
Mr. Doi, reel 10. Now, while you were at Changi Barracks, how you say people's morale was good.
Yes.
But one thing that a lot some prisoners have problems, mental problems, coping with being prisoner. They get depressed. They get aggressive. They start arguing and fighting with each other. Was there any sign of people who weren't coping well?
As far as my knowledge go, and as far as what I've witnessed, in no time did I witness that sort of thing amongst our people at all. Obviously, I suppose that our people, depending on their makeup, and probably even from civilian life, they were that way inclined. But I never experienced anything where people got fighting over this or tried to steal one another's rations or anything, despite the fact that we were virtually starving at that particular time. Starvation, by the way, is something one become accustomed to over a period of time, and this was just in its initial stages. But
so the prisoners got on well together. There weren't some people who didn't sort of fit in. Everybody was pretty
well. Going back a long time, as I say, over 50 odd years, I can never recall that ever happening. I never recall that happening. If I were to say that during that period of time in those barracks, some of the men used to break camp from there, and they would go out and outside the perimeter of the barracks, and they would try and do a little bit of bartering with some of the natives around that area. For example, some chaps have still got a ring on their fingers or some little thing of sentimental value which they didn't really want to dispose of, but because they wanted to live, that was strong in their minds, they would go out and they would get things. There was also those who were going out evidently, which I didn't know about at the time, but I've heard afterwards, that they were going out and bringing in whatever food medical supplies they could get their hands on, so that our doctors, medical doctors who were at the barracks, they had set up one block as a hospital to take in sick POWs and to do what they could with so little things to in the way of medicines, even with doing operations and that sort of thing. They had a certain amount, I think, given by the Japanese, but very, very little. And so that sort of thing was brought in. The Japs found out about this and about men leaving the camp. And so they put on the perimeter outside some of the people who had gone over to the Japs, namely the Sikhs. Now, the Sikhs of the day were treacherous people. They went over to the Japs just like that. And they, when they found some of our chaps outside, they bashed them up with their rifles and that they done and tortured them, these Sikhs, despite the fact that they were our allies during the Battle of Singapore. And we developed a hate for the Sikhs. On the other hand, the Gurkhas who were taken prisoners and that sort of thing were kept as a group, but they at no time did they ever fraternise with the Japanese. And later on, we used to see lorry loads of Gurkhas, and they would wave to us as they went by. That was life. As far as I can give you in detail anyway.
Now, what was your health like?
My health itself wasn't too bad. I did develop these symptoms of lack of vitamin B on the beriberi side, but I didn't get wet beriberi, thank heavens. But I was affected by my sight for a period of time until we got these rice polishings. Strange to say, they were quite miraculous because in a short period of time, by the intake of these rice polishings, all these symptoms disappeared. So we were very grateful to receive rice polishings.
You wouldn't see much of the Japanese then?
We didn't see much of the Japanese until a little bit later, which, if when you want me to, I will...
Well, before we go, what about the camp organisation? How was the camp run? Who organised it?
The camp, as I have said, was run by our own officers. Those who were seniority, had seniority over other ranks, obviously took command. I forget the person who was in complete command of us. It's such a long time ago, I can't remember who he was. But I must say that those officers made a fairly good job of helping us. But they did remain fairly aloof from us, ordinary ranks. I must say that probably it had its... advantages, in as much, of course, it did create discipline. So you did have respect for somebody or something, even in the position we were in. But we did have respect from officers. We did have to salute our officers at that particular time. And on reflection, perhaps we didn't at that particular time appreciate it, but I realised that this was done to create discipline amongst us in the camps, and it turned out to be to the advantage of all in the end.
What happened next? What's the next thing that happened that you remember?
The next thing what happened, during quite a period of being run by, as I've just said, our officers, the Japanese appeared. The Japanese who came into the camp and the like, they didn't appear to be in any way nasty or anything like that. There was no bashing up or anything. They gave instructions to our officers to form working parties to go out into Singapore itself and to do certain work in Singapore. I was assigned to go to Singapore to work on the docks.
So what were you doing?
And when we were on the docks, we were sort of loading up various things such as rubber and the like. And they in the warehouses which existed, there was all sorts of things in there, which I suppose was stuff which had been taken on the island's capitulation. They were tins of this and tins of food, tins of oil, tins of that sort of thing. And we were loading these things up. We came across our first experience of the brutality of the Japanese when perhaps there was big sacks of sugar and that, and perhaps there was chaps who just helped themselves to a little handful of sugar while done. If the Japs saw you doing that, you were made to stand at attention and you were bashed until the man was completely unconscious. This is their attitude to us, and they did everything in that respect to humiliate us in front of the population. That was one of the things. They also our dress became what we called a Jap happy. It was a piece of cloth with some tape at the top, and you tied it round your waist, and then you pulled it up between your legs and put it through the tape, and that was your attire, and therefore you were made to look like coolies, which in effect I suppose we were. But that was the sort of thing what happened, and to the Chinese, who detested the Japanese, we saw heads which had been cut off, and these were put onto poles. You know, these Chinese, and so they'd been absolutely brutal to the Chinese. This is when we realised the type of people that we were prisoners. We began to realise that their mentality as such was sadistic in every sense of the word. Also, we found out that the Japanese army military personnel had corporal punishment themselves, and they had, for example, whereas we have a private and then a lance corporal and a corporal, they had three privates, one a first star, second star and third star, and then the lance corporal and the sergeant, and each one of those in seniority would make the other subservient to them and would make them stand at attention and bash them up. Now could we ever do that in our army? That was the mentality of that of the Japanese. They were subservient in every way possible to their officers. There was no such thing, for example, in their army as sick parades, as we had sick parades. There was no humanitarian aspect of life at all. If they were sick, they just had to get over it. And this I will relate to what I witnessed when later on, when I was a prisoner of war in Thailand. All these things came to pass.
So how hard was the work of the working party, given that you worked on a good diet?
The work was pretty hard. And we, by that time, of course, with the diet that we were on, we were all becoming somewhat frail physically, but nevertheless we had to carry quite heavy loads on those docks. That was one of the aspects of where I went. Another working party that I was on was very reasonable. We were assigned to an area called Bukit Timah, in the island of Singapore, and it was where there was a golf course, and the Japanese, I think, at that time were at a loss to know what to put us to, so we were assigned to work on a small bridge. The Japanese were very adept at and skillful at woodwork, and this small bridge was to cross a stream on the golf course. It was a wooden constructed bridge without any metal, nails or what have you. It was done to lead to one of their shrines in a hill on the golf course, and we were to work on making this shrine and that sort of thing, which they believed in their emperor being a god, and they worshipped the god, and I think they also worshipped the sun, because at night time they all would stand and chant towards the sun, the receding sun. That was one of their things that they did. We also found that if any of them departed, evidently they thought more of the spirit of the departed than they did of their souls as living creatures. And they would make a grave out there where the shrine was, and on the grave they would put such things as bananas and various fruit. This was all to help the departed warrior in his spirit life, as we found out later on.
So we worked on
in relative easy work on this bridge. I can remember also some of the Chinese who had also been put on the golf course, and they were working on what I assumed to be, I would think it was probably marble or some old granite, no, granite probably. And they would work and they would sit on their haunches on there with little hammers and chisel, and they would be chiseling away all day long at this. This was all to do with this shrine and that. That was my experience there, and it was relatively easy. We had food there which was about the same as we had had at the Changi barracks. So that was just one of the working parties which I personally was on, but there were others where our men were put to work. I believe there was a big monument there somewhere for the fallen in Singapore. I know very little about Singapore actually at the present day, but I think they worked on that and various other things throughout
those
the
two
island Singapore.
You just did the docks and the shrine area.
As far as I remember on those things, yeah. So eventually, I got returned to Changi Barracks, and I was there for some period of time doing more or less exactly what I have already stated in the initial stages when we first arrived at the Changi Barracks. Other chaps, of course, as we learned later, were in the infamous Changi prison, which turned out to be not a very good place to be. In fact, I think that Leslie Mullander, who you went to see, I think he was at Changi Barracks most of the time. I don't think he ever left Singapore, so he didn't come up in the jungles where we were. Leslie was there all the time, so he would have done, I assume, that.
Have you met your friend again, Benny?
Benny Howard. In retrospect, once again, could I go back to the time of when the rest of the 18th Division arrived at Singapore? Yes. That was when I met my friend Benny Howard once again, after he'd been in India. And so we met for a brief period of time on Singapore Island itself. But that was only a fleeting gathering at some place. I couldn't tell you where I ran into Benny. And we were able to give our best wishes to each other. And that was all I knew of Benny until later on, when I'll tell you when I met him as up in the jungles of...
So you didn't meet him in Changi?
I don't think Benny was at Changi. I really couldn't say. He may well have been, but I can't recall that, whether he was at Changi or whether he was in Changi prison. I just don't know. That side of my memory is depleted somewhat. I just can't recall.
So anything else happened while you were at Changi?
Life existed very much as what I've already explained in Changi Barracks, you know, with the rationing and also the entertainments. What entertainments we could were completely improvised in any way that we could do it. We kept ourselves occupied that way. But if I went on other working parties, I probably did, but I can't remember them, you know. All I can remember being one place in Singapore. We were put into these huts and we could hear this strange music going on in Singapore, and I could remember the smell of bread or something of cooking as it wafted over to where we were. And in our state of starvation, God, that brought back a few memories. And it was quite torturous to smell the thing, you know. In fact, I had an old piece of cardboard, a small piece of cardboard, which I still have with me here today. And on it, I tried to relate to what I was thinking about at that particular time. And I had a small piece of pencil, and I wrote on that little piece of card, scrambled egg and gold watch. And the reason I wrote gold watch is because I had my 21st birthday in Singapore, and I thought that my father was going to give me on my 21st birthday a gold watch, which was something in those days, because this is what my father did to each of the family when they got to 21. So a gold watch was something to be treasured in those days. Yeah. That's the sort of thing what one thought about. As I say, going back once again to the return to Changi Barracks, we existed as we had done before, which I have related before. Yeah, to the same sort of thing. And then I suppose the next thing which I would tell you about is what happened when we left Changi Barracks.
Now, when was that? You'd been in the barracks since February, or late February. When did you leave?
Well, could I say that the question what you've just asked me is a question what one would ask nowadays, and you'd simply look round and you'd either look at the calendar, or you would know precisely what the day was. You know what the date was. You know what the month was. Well, we had nothing of that. We had none of the simple things of life, such as a toothbrush. We had not a bar of soup. We had not a flannel to wash with. We had none of those things what you expect and accept today. We didn't have those sort of things, were taken away from us. If you had a shave, if you were lucky enough to perhaps have a safety razor, that safety razor was one which would last you many, many months and many torturous days of trying to shave with a blunt razor. But what we did have at the barracks, we did, if you were fortunate enough, you'd have a knife and a fork perhaps to eat from. We had mess cans, we still had our mess cans, and some with utensils, and one would sharpen a table knife or a dinner knife on the concrete in the barracks, and you'd sharpen it up to as fine an edge as you could, and then you'd try to have a dry shave, which was, I say, quite torturous to try and shave with a table knife. This is what went on throughout all our prison war. We were deprived of those simple things in life which now people take for granted. And so therefore, time, the day, were not relevant. We didn't know of them. We didn't know one day from another. In fact, as we went through our prison war days, we hardly knew which year it was. We had no communication in as much as news of a wireless set. So therefore, we had no idea how the war was progressing. That was one of our concerns. We thought that possibly, who was to know anyway, the length of time of which we were to remain prisoners? Who was to know our fate? All those things were in our mind. Our morale was such, I think, whilst we were there, that our troops would be attacking Malay once again, and would be coming down Malay and that sort of thing, and it would sort the Japanese out, and that we would gain our freedom once again to join in the military affairs of what we were destined to do. So that was the sort of thing that one had in mind. So one must remember that when we talk about prisoner war days, that those things were taken away from us. Time and dates, etc., etc., didn't really mean anything to us. It didn't mean as it does in civilian life, that you start work at 9 o'clock have a lunch and a cup of coffee at 11 o'clock, and at 1 o'clock you'd probably have a meal and then work the afternoon, go through. Those things didn't exist. So therefore we became immune to that side of life. And as we progressed, which I will explain later, so that life departed from us.
Well, roughly speaking, I mean, a year, 6 months, 2 months?
What?
We were at Changi.
I should think around about 6 months, something like that, yeah. Or probably maybe 4 months, 3 months, I couldn't tell you really, before we went to Thailand.
But it was still in 1942?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, what happened when you heard? What happened when you went to Thailand?
We were told, and the rumour went round that we were to move from Changi Barracks. We were to go to Thailand, and in Thailand we would have wonderful camps. There would be Red Cross camps. We would be housed so that there was plenty of food, plenty of medical supplies. We were given that sort of almost a utopia of our prisoner of war life, which of course we found out there was.
Did you believe it, though?
At the time, we believed because we couldn't really grasp that anybody would go to the extent of the cruelty of telling people who were starving at that time, and with the treatment that they would tell us otherwise. We still looked upon the mentality of the Japanese, I suppose, to some degree as our own. We couldn't believe that there were people who had no thought for human life, not even their own. Such was their indoctrination, and to their emperor, and this was believed. Probably we were a bit apprehensive about it, but nevertheless we couldn't believe as to what was our eventual fate and destination, and what it was all about. This was never told us at all.
How did they pack up the? Did you all go together, or did you go in batches?
We went in batches. We were formed into various units and groups, and we were put onto these trains at Singapore. And what we were put into, there was about 30 prisoners of war put into these goods trucks. Now, they were metal trucks. There was no seating in those. There was no nothing whatsoever except a metal floor. And so we were put into these trucks to be destined to proceed on a journey to Thailand. When we were put into the Japanese commander made a speech, and I can't recall that speech, but I do believe it was on the lines of which I've just said, that we would be going to these camps, etc.
So what happened when you were put in the goods trucks? What happened then?
Well, we were put in the goods trucks, and in each truck, we had a sergeant or somebody of that particular rank in charge of the chaps, and there we had to sit on these metal floors.
They were open trucks.
The door was left open, because if it wasn't left open, by the time they had opened it, we would all have been dead, because the sun. On the roof, the tropical sun was such that the metal of the trucks got absolutely red hot.
You couldn't.
Oh yeah, metal. They were complete metal. Metal sized metal roof. Yeah, they were comprised purely and simply metal, no wood whatsoever.
What was it like?
It was hell. It was hell in there, and we tried if we could en route, which